there. So we send our well wishes to the folks out in Cali and stuff, and we hope that they have some speedy recoveries out there, because it is very alive out there.
Yes. Forest fires, Oregon forest fires, California, man, this bad stuff going on. Hey, Michael, let's take it out with, did you get a chance to find Pastor Fred? And Papa was a Rolling Stone.
I sure did. Yes, I did.
We're going to end it with Pastor Fred with a little joviality here. We'll be back next week. Freeman next. Press Watch is up next. Michael, you the man. And keep listening to Cable, y'all. Thank you. Freeman X out.
You're listening to Press Watch. This is August 27th. Now here's your host, Teresa. Teresa, are you on?
Hear me at all?
Oh, here you are. All right. Hi, Teresa. Sorry about that.
All right. No worries. I'm so pleased that during a pandemic, we can do this by remote, you know, so.
Yes.
and it's live radio, and I'm just really glad to get to participate. So thank you so much, Mike. And I'll just start again. This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, other frequencies in Cascadia, KBOO.com. Well, stay tuned, because I want to have a conversation with you about the first minor outbreaks of violence in the Second American Civil War. And I say that with great heaviness in my heart. I'm hoping we can turn that around. But first, I have some news briefs. The Trump administration, I want you to know, has mounted a massive online hacking effort to censor the online service of Radio Havana, Cuba. This means that you, a United States citizen, are allowed and not able to simply pull up radiohc.cu/en and see what the Cubans have to say. Whether you agree with it or not, you don't get to find out, and that's been unavailable to Americans for a week now. It can still be heard on International Shortwave Radio in English at 9820 and 6,000 megahertz. They also broadcast in Spanish and even in Nahuatl and Guarani. Statement from the Cuban government follows. Havana, August 26th, the recent 24-hour disabling of Cuban media accounts on Google and YouTube confirms a systematic U.S. policy of silencing messages from Cuba at a time of maximum international urgency, for which they have had the perverse collaboration of the great digital emporium corporations, this time adducing the laws of the blockade as a pretext, end quote. So you'll have to try harder than that, fascist, to block international news from this outlet. So here's the international news from Radio Havana. China has warned the United States today that it is putting peace and interests of both peoples at risk with provocations such as sending ships to its air and maritime space. After remarking on its determination to counteract those actions, Wu Qian, a spokesman for the defense ministry, denounced the situation at a press conference, saying that Washington and its attempt to exert pressure on Beijing even threatens the lives of its own soldiers. As he said, behind these practices are some North American politicians who seek electoral benefits by undermining bilateral relations. Speaking for myself, of course, he's talking about Trump. Returning to the text of Radio Havana, inciting conflicts and causing military accidents between both powers, he demanded that the White House avoid all kinds of provocations because China will not be afraid to respond and will proceed with the necessary means to protect its development, interests, sovereignty, and national security. However, he denied that the current maneuvers of the People's Liberation Army in jurisdictional waters are targeting a third country and assured they are part of the routine 2020 training program. Wu also stressed the sovereignty of the Asian state over the island of Taiwan, urged the United States to handle the matter with extreme caution, and rejected any external contact or support for the separatist claims of the southern islands. Since Monday, the PLA has been carrying out exercises in three maritime areas that, according to analysts, will be a deterrent to the independence aspirations of Taiwan and threats from the United States. The operations will take place simultaneously in the South Yellow and Bohai Seas, and they will allow China to check the defensive capacity of all the military corps commands, and some will be under live fire. They follow a few real combat drills held earlier this month. Zhang Qinhui, a spokesman for the Eastern Theater of Operations Command, said it was a necessary action to look out for national interests and issued a statement deploring that the White House sent the wrong signal to the separatist forces in Taiwan with the recent visit of the Secretary Alex Azar. The international community also approved a resolution with 170 votes in 1971, that considers the People's Republic of China the only legitimate representative to the United Nations and recognizes the island of Taiwan as an inalienable part of China. To move towards the complete reunification of the national territory, Beijing also upholds the policy of one country, two systems applied in the administrative regions of Hong Kong and Macau. However, Taipei leaders refuse to accept that status. So that is Chinese statements by way of Radio Havana, Cuba, which, as I mentioned, it has been censored. You are not allowed to see it. The Trump administration sneakily held an important meeting of the Centers of Disease Control on the 20th of this month while Anthony Fauci was unconscious and undergoing throat surgery. The purpose of the underhanded cabal was to push through a Trump desire to reduce testing by removing the medical necessity of testing people who are asymptomatic. Coronavirus notoriously spreads while its victims are asymptomatic, and the only purpose of the change is to produce and reduce fake statistics, reducing the number of officially recognized infections, thereby supporting the re-election claims and campaign of Donald Trump. Jacob Blake, a black man, is still somehow miraculously alive after being shot in the back 7 times in a blatant attempt at extrajudicial execution by the Kenosha, Wisconsin police. Pardon me. Now, well, it seems that I have more phlegm. Now two of the white allies of the Black Lives Matter demonstration in Kenosha have been shot dead, blasted by a war weapon casually carried over state lines by a 17-year-old white police supporter. Kyle Rittenhouse, the murderer, was coddled, praised, and offered water by the police, and even after his murders could not get their attention to surrender. He ran away across state lines. Anthony Huber and Joseph Rosenbaum effectively served as surrogates for Rittenhouse's hatred of blacks, as his powerful war rifle shattered their bodies and killed them. And the police allowed the gunshot victims to bleed out, but would not allow Huber's girlfriend to even recover her car keys from the shattered body of her lover, whose only crime had been to try to stop the cop-worshipping gangster from engaging in a broader mass murder. More on that and your calls coming up. By the way, if you want to dial now, it's 503-231-8187. Are you registered to vote? Are you sure? You'd best check. Initial helicopter video shows that Hurricane Laura has drowned Lake Charles, Louisiana, and badly damaged Beaumont, Texas, once again obliterating majority black neighborhoods, as did Katrina 15 years ago. National relief efforts for Harvey were strongly biased towards white people. And national relief efforts have yet to begin in Lake Charles. Evacuations were limited in black neighborhoods, and people were left behind and are now probably dead. The massive refineries in the area were kept operating, even in the Category 4 winds of over 150 miles per hour. And the Washington Post reports a toxic cloud is now blowing and floating down Highway 10 in Lake Charles. There may be updates in this broadcast. Time is 9:09 a.m. You're listening to People's Community Radio, KBOO Portland. We have once again reset our annual meeting due to the difficulties of the pandemic. And as I've mentioned before, a lot of radio stations are forced to do this. So we're going to try again, and it looks like we have set a date in November. There will be more announcements on this on KBOO.fm and on air. So look for that. And, of course, we will also be once again mounting the campaign so that you as a member can run for the board of directors of KBOO. We also have bylaws changes that we would like to address at the annual meeting. I believe November 7th is the date, and so the question is, will it be virtual, or can we find a place where we can social distance? We don't know all the answers of that yet, but I think it's great that we can participate on an open and democratic basis and have the community radio station that we want to have. So please keep that in mind. Pardon me. My name is Teresa Mitchell. This is called Press Watch, News You're Not Supposed to Know. What I want to do here is compare notes with you. I want you to call in 503-231-8187. As we have all observed the hard right turn over the past few years leading to the current situation, in which we see repeated over and over as if trying to convince us of the fascist disaster that we live in, that police departments across the nation stand as one in their determination to intimidate, crush, and murder black people. If you're like me, you investigated this phenomenon some years ago, so it won't surprise you to hear me say that police departments, and for that matter the Second Amendment, came out of the founding slave-mongering culture and its hierarchical profit model. A well-armed militia is necessary to the health of the state if and when the state is composed in order to maintain the hierarchy of the white rich. The initial election of Trump as president was clearly based on the desire of the moneyed elites and the beneficiaries of white supremacist capitalist structure to fend off demographic change and the outbreak of egalitarianism and actual democratic power that it seemed to threaten. And that's all to say that the police are now foot soldiers in a civil war. The aim of the civil war, not just the Boogaloo people, the aim of those who desire to wage it is to maintain the United States in the Jim Crow apartheid economic model. This model, which is very profitable for the very rich, keeps BIPOC and especially black men in terror of police, of the courts, of doing time, for attempting to compete economically when all legitimate doors are closed. Even BIPOC, who have never done anything but legitimate work, must necessarily dread the model that will fire them or even imprison them on a false, exaggerated, or disproportionately enforced infraction. Always, the rules of capitalist society are there to serve as facade, to pretend that generations of stripping away wealth and status leave BIPOC perfectly able to compete on an equal basis. Under the sneering paradigm, the worker who gets sick and loses her job and gets evicted made poor lifestyle choices, and this fiction allows the profitable collection of rent and also the profitable depression of wages, for there's always a reserve army ready to replace the worker, or the professional if you like, with another desperate job seeker. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. And feel free, Mike, to break in and let me know when people are calling. I have a long statement here. Okay. Those evictions and firings and exclusions and abuse are backed up by the gun of the police officer. In extremis, at the end, there is the gun. And the gun may appear at any moment to cripple or maim or snuff out a life at the first and merest sign of disobedience, or even for no reason at all. This is our America. It's not an aberration. And the cops know it on a visceral basis, and Trump is only the logical manifestation of this violent desire to maintain injustice. I want to say that again, this violent desire to maintain injustice. So it is that the police, frustrated in city after city in their mission to terrorize a growing population of dissenters, have turned to an even less responsible and more violent reserve force, the Second Amendment white gangs. The pistol and rifle-waving vigilantes are simply the modern 21st century version of what the Founding Fathers intended to have in reserve, and the event of the outbreak of heroes like Nat Turner. The question is now, how far have we slid into a Civil War situation? As a caller was saying, or a commentator was saying earlier, we've been in a Civil War situation since Charlottesville. The question is, can we back out of it? Right now, it is clear that an assault rifle-toting teen has carte blanche to shoot whom he will. That's marginally worse, I suppose, than cops shooting or strangling whom they choose and getting away with it every time. The problem is that the franchise of violence is expanding, and I want to know how far it is going to go and how far we are all going to let it go. I have questions about emergency response teams who inject victims of police violence with ketamine, or simply wait on cops' orders until the intended victim is irretrievably a corpse. I have questions about my fellow citizens and my fellow white people who believe they are too good to commit violence themselves, but financially and politically support the uninterrupted horror of anti-BIPOC police departments. At this point, I have to question the competence of anyone who would kid themselves that the repeated bias shown by police towards war weapon-bearing gangs of white men is an error or a coincidence. So what are we going to do about it? Because if you're a general in a war and your troops make some errors and or get a little crazy, you can't halt the offensive to hold a tribunal. And I've heard too many cops and journalists now repeat the word civilian as if it doesn't apply to police. Police are civilians, remember, or at least they're supposed to be, but they refer to themselves as troops and battalions. The press has taken up that sort of talk. The question now is to what degree those troops include armed white gang members like Alan Swinney, who is allowed to continue to attend Portland protests after video evidence showed him brandishing and aiming a pistol at protesters. That, by the way, in case you didn't know, is a violation of ORS 166.190, quote, any person over the age of 12 years who, with or without malice, purposely points or aims any loaded or empty pistol, gun, revolver, or other firearm at or towards another person within range of the firearm, except in self-defense, shall be fined upon conviction in any sum not less than $10 or more than $500, or be imprisoned in the county jail not less than 10 days nor more than 6 months, or both, end quotes. Number to call, 503-231-8187.
Teresa, we have Barry on the line who would like to join in the conversation.
That's great. I'd like to talk with Barry. What's up, Barry?
Hi, Teresa. Excuse my voice, it's a little off. There was someone last night that was said to be anti-Semitic, something about saying Israel was trying to take over the United States and the world. But the country of Israel is certainly trying to do so, according to the book Solving 9/11 by Christopher Boland, that book. And that tells about why a lot of things are happening right now. And it's been taken off the show. The shelves, but you can order it in a bookstore, or you can order it on the Red website.
That book has been platformed as you were about to be, Barry, because that's anti-Semitic crap, and I'm not standing
for it. It is. It is.
I criticize the Israelis.
Yes.
On many bases, and I deplore the amount of money that the U.S. sends to Israel to maintain it as a garrison state. I deplore the depraved inversion of the need to have a homeland for Jewish people after the Holocaust into a colonialist experiment of white
Palestinians.
And I'm very concerned about the plight of the Palestinians, but I'm sorry, I can't.
Yeah,
I'm not going
not
to agree with
Semitic.
Anything that promotes a lie like the Protocols of the Elders of Zion or anything else
that's
that characterizes
not
Jewish
correct,
people.
Correct, though. Teresa, that's not correct.
Inferior.
It's inaccurate.
Okay, we've had this discussion many times, and it's completely off topic. So thanks for calling in, Barry.
Oh, no, it isn't.
And, Mike, I'd like to go on with my comment here.
Sorry about that. Please continue. Yes.
Okay. Number to call, 503-231-8187. I was talking about the situation that we have in which the desire to maintain whiteness, whether conscious in the case of the militias, the gangs, or unconscious in the case of liberals, has approached a civil war situation. The trial of the My Lai massacre perpetrators during the Vietnam War did not result in justice because it was the perpetrators who conducted the trial. Nor can I believe that police are not secretly thrilled by arson and looting because we've seen over and over that they encourage it and even arrange for it to happen. If they really wanted to stop the burning, it would be a simple matter to allow the fire department in or even to have a few people handy with large fire extinguishers. No, they want that video of fire and thievery to go forward so that they can say to a frightened white population, only we can protect you, even though their inaction contradicts that. And I want to back that up with my personal observations and experience over 30 years of broadcasting. Yes, when a large demonstration is happening that the police don't like, yes, they will arrange for looting. I've seen that directly in 99, and we saw it recently with Umbrella Man, and it's a common thing. The police know that they get political grist from looting, and those fires start very small, by and large. There's not a whole lot of accelerant is brought by hand to start those fires, and the videos show that they could easily have been put out at any point by anyone with even a medium-sized fire extinguisher. So I ask you, please do not accept the implication promoted by the police and secondarily by the press that these fires cannot be stopped. It isn't true, and the police love it. That's not to say that violence against buildings and violence against institutional symbols like statues can't be useful and important in moving forward. After all, as I said, the system is a hierarchy of violence and responds only to violence under most circumstances, and so I find some of this as inevitable. But I'm exaggerating the role of the police in this. The real force is the dead weight of whiteness, insisting that no change is necessary or that some minor tweak, a body camera or a new law, will somehow stop the killings, as if the whole structure of power that grows out of intimidation and murder of black people could be ended with a gesture of goodwill. This is like asking Imperial Rome to send the centurions home and forswear tribute payments. That never happened because Rome consisted of tribute payments. It wouldn't have been Rome otherwise. Likewise, America was built on extermination, abduction, torture, and forced labor, and it expanded to the whole world after 1898. It's not giving that up because that's what keeps the Pentagon and the ICE thugs and the prisons and the corporations in business, and it's big business. The empire can't reform itself. It'll keep going to the world is uninhabitable. The structure of the empire depends on unquestioning obedience, so it is terrified of the phrase, Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter, because once that is understood, the pin is pulled from the towering scaffolding and it has to come down. The city councils, almost without exception, have no intention of defunding the police. They're waiting for everything to blow over, like it did after murdering MLK, like it did after beating Rodney King. The apartheid capitalist establishment is huge and heavy, and all it has to do is wait. Number call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. I hope that I am provoking some response here, and I hope that I am provoking it by the use of truth. This is Polemics. I am a propagandist, but I'm good enough propagandist to use the truth. This brings me around to the etymology of the word legitimate. It centers on the ability to read, because in times and places in medieval and post-medieval Europe and Britain, one could evade the grasp of civil court for any crime, even a heinous crime, by demonstrating the ability to read Latin. And that's what this word means, lex legis, reading. Latin was the common post-empire language, and it was only taught to nobles and essential people in the church and the court. That is, not to women, not to serfs. So reading Latin was proof that you were of the nobility, that you had land. It was very important in the passing down of the fief. And thus, you were allowed to aggress against the people generally. Offensive, isn't it? At times, it was very offensive. The knights and the princes of medieval cities were known to occasionally go out and just cut people up for practice, so they could speak Latin. Whiteness is in part the extension of the idea of legitimacy. That idea that there is a class of people that is untouchable, and there was thus was never, if you will pardon me for producing a conundrum, morally legitimate. Legitimacy was never legitimate. So we have the phenomenon of official forms and census and mythology pretending that there is such a thing as a white race. Of course, the whole idea of race is fraught with pseudoscience, but even under its wobbly definition, there is no white phenotype. And whiteness is conferred according to indices that have to do with learned gestures and conformity with dominant groups that have paler skin. Whiteness has to do with learning how to oppress. As in any large cult, pardon me, it is the outrageousness and the ridiculousness and the grievous harm of the central belief that gives it its strength. So for the followers of Charles Taze Russell, the belief was so strong that they all made fools of themselves sitting on their rooftops in 1914 wearing white so that Jesus could see them the more easily and pick them up. They later became the Jehovah's Witnesses, and you just try to tell any one of them that the word Jehovah is an accidental amalgam of Yahweh and Adonai produced by attempting to pronounce an unpronounceable word with the vowel points of its euphemism. Nor could anyone tell the followers of Jim Jones not to drink the Kool-Aid. But these were poisonous lies. Pardon me. Powerful by dint of their falseness and by enforcement by their followers. And so is whiteness. But unlike Russell and Jones, whiteness has a president and a Pentagon and every police force in the nation to enforce it. This means money, money conferred to the legitimate in the form of New Deal jobs for whites in the 30s, the GI Bill for whites in the middle 20th century, and every job and apartment and house on the supposedly level playing field of American capitalism today. And to remove whiteness or even to identify it and to understand it is, again, to undermine the whole power structure. People understand this, actually, on a visceral level. This is what gives white militia gangs and the Nazis and the Klan their power. This is what makes liberals hesitate. The understanding of an immoral power structure only on the gut level. That's what's doing it. To comprehend its nature consciously, fully, is to burn with the knowledge of evil, particularly if you're white and you're perpetrating it. For the Democratic Party, the election of Barack Obama was a powerful method of obscuring the white power structure. That's not to say that the gesture did not open possibilities and reduce harm, but it did not end housing discrimination, nor job discrimination, nor did it open the prisons crammed disproportionately of black men. So it was acceptable to liberals who did not want to confront the moral, social, and economic need for acknowledgement, repentance, and reparation of the structure of whiteness. Republicans seethed in anger and terror because they do not question power at all, so they revenge, and here we are. I think one of the most wonderful things that has happened in 2020 is that the NBA has refused to play. I read a tweet from a black woman that said, quote, sports are the reward for a functioning society, end quote. That wraps things up pretty neatly, I think. We, some of us anyway, can see that our society does not function for the benefit of the people, even if it is decorated with lovely words like liberty and democracy. And that's the end of my rant on that subject. I invite your comments and questions. 503-231-8187. Yes.
Yes, hi. We do have a phone call. We have Tracy first. Sorry, Nathaniel. First, we have Tracy on line one.
Okay, Tracy, go ahead.
Tracy, are you there? Tracy, are you there?
I'm here, Linda.
Linda, I'm sorry, Linda. My mistake, Linda. It's Linda on line one.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you. I thought I was waiting for Tracy, too. Hi, Teresa. Thank you for the show. I just wanted to say really clearly that for those who support the current mayor, that he has once again sided with his police force. I'm sure he was in on it and supported the fascists being allowed to come into our city and start fights and bring arms. I saw at least one photo of a pistol pointed at Black Lives Matter demonstrators, and I saw one guy running with a long rifle. I thought it was maybe an AK-47, but I only saw it one time on the news. He allows those kinds. He allows his police to allow those people to come from out of state. There were Texas and other fascists who came here to do this, and then they call it a mutual brawl. And they turn their back. He refuses. He and his police refuse to protect Oregon citizens or people in Oregon demonstrating and using their First Amendment rights. He sides with the fascists every time, and they just killed two people back east. He is absolutely on the wrong side of history. And, you know, the sign should now be saying throw him out and anyone on the city council who cannot take the right stand on this. And who pretends that they're equal somehow? We have to let these guys come in with these big arms? Yeah, sure. Show Black Lives Matter walking around with visible guns and what would happen. Give me a break. I mean, people try to pretend that this is, and I think it was also revenge. The whole, well, we didn't have enough police because we were bothered with you up there with your riot, which they also keep calling targeted demonstrations against specific government buildings, police buildings. They portray it as a riot, which usually means much more widespread and broad and not necessarily so clearly targeted destruction of property. So, you know, the whole thing is bull from the side of our mayor, and I don't see our city council standing up against the right now at all. They issue statements saying nothing. Go ahead. Sorry. That was my rant, Teresa. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Well, I think that you're saying the truth there. And the thing is with Ted Wheeler is that he has a very woke affect. But it's his gestures that reveal where he stands and what power he represents. He is a scion of a wealthy, I believe it was a timber family. And that wealth stands, as I was saying, on this structure of oppression, primarily race oppression. And to acknowledge that and to change that would require confronting the police association. That would be a tremendous effort, and he's not going to do it. He's going to wait until the pressure is off. And
Democrats are probably never going to face down the police. This whole thing, the feds coming here and stuff, was as soon as we defunded the police, as soon as we made actual concrete proposals that got passed, though how much they got passed and what's going to actually happen is still to be seen. But, you know, the feds came in, boom, this is about crushing Black Lives Matter and maintaining their thug force to over people of color.
It is, and yeah, what else can we say about that? 503-231-8187.
Well, except if there are any demonstrations that you can go to safely, I'm going to try to find one. I'm a little bit older, not supposed to be too close to people, but I can sure go stand, you know, in vicinity and be part of it. I just say everyone in the streets. We need everyone out for this.
I have agreed with the two very vulnerable people in my household that will not take the risk of infecting them, and so I haven't been showing up publicly very much at all, and not at demonstrations. But I'm very grateful for those that have.
Yeah, it's so important. It's terrifically important that what Portland is doing, and it's heard around the world. It's getting misrepresented, but I'm quite sure there are places that are hearing the real voices of the leadership, of the young and activists and people in the street every night. So I think those of us who can't be down there need to remember that and support them and not fall into these buckets of, oh, they're bad, they're being violent. They're taking out, they're doing exactly, which is historically appropriate to do, is they're targeting the enemy and going directly there and not to the people. They're not branching out and burning down neighborhoods. No. They're going to the police precinct or the police building or the, you know, police enforcement. Pay attention to what they're doing. It's not a riot. Anyway, well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, Linda. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Now, I've been talking about this this outbreak of civil war, this first few minor skirmishes, and it's all very performative at this point. I am no expert in warfare, but I will say that we still are at the point of demonstrations in the sense that the white men walking around with their guns are demonstrating that they can use them, they really want to use them. I think that is the primary motivator that brings them down with those weapons. They are attempting to intimidate. They're trying to shut down the whole discussion of the essential structure, as I was saying, of whiteness in this society. Don't dare talk about it because you might get shot by one of these guys. And so this was demonstrated the other day, and two white men have died attempting to disarm this kid who had such gracious treatment at the hands of the Kenosha police. And it's not an error, it's not an exception. This is exactly how the white gangs have been treated by the police here. We've seen this over and over again. I have often thanked local Antifa for saving me, particularly at one moment in 2017 when I saw that the police were rushing toward us. And the Antifa brought their shields together and blocked the police from knocking me over. My spine is held together by an incrustation over a failed repair structure. And that I really would have been hurt if they had been able to knock me flat as they attempted. So it's standing together that makes the difference. And
Teresa, we also have another phone call. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we also have phone call. Nathaniel would like to chime in as well.
Okay. I'm sorry. Sorry about that. Go ahead, Nathaniel.
Hi. A couple of things, Teresa. I really appreciate your program. I've been listening to it for years. And I generally agree with your analysis of white supremacy and American history. I think it's right on. But I don't think it helps our side to ignore crap or make serious mistakes. And so I'd just like to correct a few little things. First off, legitimate has nothing to do with the word to read.
Oh, yes,
legitimare means to make legitimate, and legere means to read in Latin. Legitimate means to make lawful. And the root of to make lawful is about bastardry. It's not about
I encourage you to look up the etymology.
I have looked it up. I have done the research, and I think you're wrong. Okay, you can keep your point of view. I'm pointing out a different point of view. The other piece of it is, I'd be one of the last people in the world to tell black people how they should represent themselves, or how their allies should represent themselves, or what they should fight for. There seems to be a time right now where they can be heard and where their allies can be heard, and I think that's great. But I don't really think the tactics are helpful. I don't think that anti-fascists and fascists brawling in the streets have ever helped anyone. I think they helped set up the rise of the Third Reich, for one thing. And then the third point is, I'm 72 years old. I've been around for a few revolutions. I've been part of the Vietnam anti-war movement since the early 1960s. I was part of the anti-war movement in 2003 when organizing at UC San Francisco when Bush invaded. And there have been many times in my life when it looked like the left was going to win. Everybody was sure, was totally convinced. And none of them happened. So maybe it will happen now. But yeah, I think it's an awful lot to risk everything on maybe it will happen now, because it never happened in 67. It never happened in 74. It never happened in 2003. So I think it's really dangerous tactics. I'm not objecting to the strategy. I'm certainly not objecting to the reason behind the rage and the anger and the struggle in the streets.
Well, but I think it's a good point to bring up. I think it's a good point to bring up. And the question is, where are we going? And can we? I have seen calls for a general strike. And with the NBA players walking off, I think that there's some momentum in that direction. And that could actually exert enough power to change the DNC's platform. I rather hope that, as much as I despise them for their imperialism and their liberalism, I do hope they get in power to replace the increasingly fascist Republican hegemony that we see in the Senate and the White House. So I think that's a great thing to bring up. I mean, if the tactic is only to continue a standoff of demonstrations, then yeah, the pressure, the violence will simply increase. Can we go to a general strike? Can we go to some other tactic that will produce the results that we need? Because I think that, and I agree, you know, time and again we have seen these demonstrations, and you know, some people believe that there is some gradual progress. But how gradual is gradual? I mean, for example, if you extrapolate the number of people riding bicycles to commute over the last decade, then you can project that easily enough with an X and Y axis and figure out that, you know, a very significant number of people will be riding bicycles 200 years from now. That's, you know, there's such a thing as insufficient progress. And I would think that either there needs to be needs to be a massive escalation, or this movement will simply be drowned by the dead weight of the establishment, just as the others that you mentioned were.
I think that the establishment's not the only dead weight. The middle class is also a dead weight. And time and again, there was a general strike in San Francisco back at the turn of the 20th century. There was a big close to general strikes in the late 1930s, before World War started.
If you look at the unions
put a kibosh on those kind of strikes in the 1930s. Anyone who says, you know, we should let Trump get reelected and let things get worse, and then, you know, we'll really get a revolution. People said that about Nixon too. And what we really got was a couple of more million dead Southeast Asians.
Yeah, I'm not down with the Hitler
you know argument. It's wonderful when Americans are willing to pay the price of fascism with the bodies of other people.
Well, the middle class at this point is mostly and is ephemeral, because the middle class has been decimated, and we have literally half the U.S. population one paycheck away from eviction. That's a powerful force, and it's just been made tremendously worse by Trump's mishandling of the pandemic. And I think that is in part driving the size and the persistence of these demonstrations. They are nominally in support of Black Lives Matter, but I think if we're honest about it, there is also an economic opportunity and economic desire and force behind this. And I think that needs to be understood before we can move to, I mean, for one thing, the solidarity with Black people and with people of color has to increase, otherwise we'll always be divided. So it's encouraging that that's happening, although it's happening, you know, as Black people have pointed out time and again, it's happening in the context of white privilege, white protesters ignoring the expressed desire, ignoring the leadership of Black people whose demonstration it is. But if that can be turned around, and if a general strike can be mounted, and that better world can be visualized, if we can understand that we don't have access to a middle class, we don't have access to social, what's the word, lifting yourself up by your bootstraps doesn't happen, is what I want to say here. My mind is failing me on a word that I want. If that understanding can be changed, then it could be that we could actually get some change here.
Maybe I'm not using quite the right word either, is middle class, and some kind of classical economic sense. But there is a middle class in this country, and it's a class of bureaucrats and managers and scientists and educators, of which I was one. I was a university scientist. Technocrats, bankers, all those people who don't really own the power structure, but get to exercise it in the name of the ruling class. And that's a large class of people. I'm referring to them as the middle class. And they have a consciousness. They have a class consciousness. Maybe, you know, their class consciousness is a false one, but they think of themselves as people of power. And they are, as long as the ruling class allows them to. And one of my fears is that Biden will win and everyone will go back to sleep again. The Democrats will say, and people will be confident to believe it's all okay now. We got rid of, you know, the fascists in chief. It's all okay now. We'll see. Yeah. I mean, I think those are two real predictions, you know, that are testable. You know, will this spread, and will the consciousness spread, and will the possibility, you know, spread that people can change things, or will people say, oh, well, we got rid of the bad guy. Let's go back to sleep again.
Yeah, that's a real danger. And I think, you know, there are huge elements of the DNC that want exactly that.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you. Thanks for doing your program. I really appreciate hearing the news they don't want me to hear.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. Okay, number to call, 503-231-8187. The governor of Louisiana is urging shelter in place, as if people had any choice at this point, as a chemical plant fire is raging. It is in, is in the wake of Hurricane Laura, and it doesn't say, this news brief that I'm reading here doesn't say where it is. I suspect that it is in or near Lake Charles, Louisiana, where a vast chemical refinery was still operating, more than one, I think. I could see that on the webcam that I was looking at last night, vast flares being blown off and blown out and being blown sideways by the force of the wind. And there were huge missiles being blown about, as is inevitable in a 150-mile-per-hour wind, and it would appear that some of those chemical plants were damaged. The latest I had on that was that a gray fog was rolling down I-10 and that it was toxic. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187.
Teresa, we have Jerry on line one that would like to make some comments.
Okay, go ahead, Jerry.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say that usually if you give people a legal way to fight their battles, they'd probably rather do that than in the streets. I don't know. They'd probably rather be home with their families instead of in the streets. So if you give them a legal way to fight these battles, that might help a little bit here. But most of these folks don't have the money to hire high-priced lawyers to fight the injustices that are happening against them. So give them a chance. Let them have a lawyer. Let them fight it. Class action, whatever. But that might get them out of the streets. Thank you.
Well, that reminds me of the fact that the ACLU has announced, as of last night, that they are mounting a lawsuit on behalf of demonstrators who have been targeted, injured by the police merely for peacefully expressing themselves. And this has happened over and over again. And the, you know, the press would have you look at those burning offices and those smashed windows, but over and over, in the context of a clearly peaceful demonstration, demonstrators who simply wanted to go out and express their First Amendment rights, who were standing peacefully near the police or who were rushed by the police, have been injured. And so the ACLU is taking to the courts to do that. But it's, as you say, I think access to the courts is difficult. I realized some years ago when I was taken in for yelling at a business owner who didn't like the fact that I was trans and looking at a window, that access to lawyers is expensive. And at that time, just to get in the door, I needed $3,000, and I needed $10,000 before I was done, just to break false charges which were brought to me, all in the all in the aftermath of that simple act of getting out of my car and looking in a window. And someone didn't like me for being trans and threatened me, said that they had a gun, told me that they were going to end my job and started calling my bosses. I yelled at them. That was my big mistake. I did not have the legitimacy, I'm going to bring that up again, to yell at them. And I've often commented that that polarized my mind. If I didn't understand from, you know, starting Press Watch way back in the late 80s at all-black KAZI radio, wasn't entirely black because I was on it, if I didn't understand from reading autobiography of Malcolm X as told to Alex Haley when it first came out in the late 60s, you know, if I didn't have it all together, then being treated like that kind of brought it to me what it must, you know, some intimation of what it must be like to be constantly viewed as the other, as the criminal, as the person under suspicion. And I'm determined to find a way in my lifetime to end this. And this seems to be, this is a good time to do it. I mean, it's a difficult time. It's a pandemic. The forests are burning. The hurricane is more powerful than it was. And it's a fraught time. But it may be that the door to liberation is open a crack. And I'm hoping that it is. I'm going to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187.
We have Sonia, KBOO Sonia online, if you like, she'd like to comment on the conversation.
Okay, go ahead, Sonia.
Good morning, everyone. I made an interesting connection thinking about the right-wing gangs invading Portland and then showing up in Kenosha as well. These are our version of the, or just plain up, straight up, are the right-wing paramilitary death squads that provide the cover, the plausible deniability to the state to enact the state's violence on behalf of the state while the state keeps its hands clean and can claim that they didn't do it. No, it was just an unfortunate tragedy. There's also that the state will always meet any disruption at all with violence. It doesn't matter if it's legal, if it's peaceful, or what the tactic is. If it disrupts the flow of capitalism, the state will respond with force, no matter what. And everyone who thinks this doesn't affect you, this is your...
Whoop.
Oh,
okay, well...
We lost Sonia.
Well, I just have to encourage Sonia to call back in.
Yeah.
I want to double down. I'm, you know, sorry to be picky-in by it, but when I was talking about the word legitimate, I do know what I'm talking about. I did take Latin, actually. The phrase is hoc nobilis et lego legitimat, and this is what the courts said. This noble can read, and it would be then kicked out of the civil courts. And, you know, when someone did something sufficiently heinous and if enough serfs complained, a murder or some such, then it could go to the church. And there was, you know, some slight last-ditch pressure, much as we have now. When we have a cop that's out of control, we can sometimes, with great pressure, get them into court, but then we find that the grand jury system is utterly compromised. The grand jury system is basically a system of producing Stockholm syndrome in a group of white people so that white officers are never charged for killing black people. All of this comes from a historic basis. This sort of oppression has been going on for a long time. And obviously, in some ways, getting worse. I was going to say that there are still some updates coming in about Hurricane Laura and the damage that has been done. This from the Washington Post: Hurricane Laura slammed southern Louisiana early this morning as a Category 4 storm, one of the most powerful to strike the Gulf Coast in decades. The storm made landfall at 1 a.m. near Cameron, Louisiana, about 35 miles east of the Texas border. On the map, speaking for myself, it looked like it just ran right up the border. Downtown Lake Charles, Louisiana, took a heavy hit with widespread destruction from Laura's devastating winds. Roofs were peeled off, buildings were destroyed, lampposts were tossed into the streets. And speaking for myself, I can see, when you see the photographs are just now coming in, you'll see that high rises have had their windows shattered, and it is reminiscent of hurricanes Katrina and Rita. And the poor parts of town, the black parts of town, of course, have been drowned, and we won't be hearing about that for a couple of days, I would imagine.
Teresa, we have Sonia back online to finish out our comments, if you'd like to let
her
back on.
Okay. Go ahead, Sonia.
Hi. Hi. We all know the poem from I think it was, I don't know if it was during or after the Holocaust, you know. First they came for the syndicalist, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a syndicalist. First, then they came for the communists, and I didn't, and so on. So this is your first they came for moment, and you must take it. This doesn't just apply to the people in the streets. This also applies to the residents of Lake Charles. You know, first they sacrificed the poor black people, and I didn't speak up because I'm not poor or black, you know. The sacrifice zones always widen. The circle of people subject to random violence by the state or paramilitary death squads will always widen. I point to my, you know, the most classic example that I've seen in my time of activism is the opening of Camp X-Ray, you know, in a little place called Guantanamo Bay. People cheered for this, and then 10 years later screamed and cried with the NDAA of 2012, when Congress asserted the exact same power that for Mr. Obama that Mr. Bush had been exerting on dark-skinned people who dared to resist the boot on their neck as terrorists. That label always widens. The more you allow it, the more you allow other people, the more you allow the state to subject other people to random violence, the less legitimacy any resistance to it happening to you will have. Legitimacy. Ha!
Well, I think it's a good analysis, and it points, that's what I'm looking at for with the show. It's like we see a direction now. We see where things are going. That's what you just described has been called blowback, among other things. But it also reminds me of the phrase that empires always turn on themselves. The reason being that empires built on violence. And so when the funds dry up overseas, you know, when the tribute isn't coming in, then you have an armed state. And, if I can use another truism, if you're wielding a hammer, everything looks like a nail. If you're wielding a sword, everything looks like you can solve it by slashing and cutting. And so this is what we, there are historic forces, I think, that are producing this sort of violence here in the United States. And we need to look at it and confront it. We also need to understand what is being protected by the violence. Because if we don't think about it, then the fascists get the upper hand because they're just going to act on it. They're just going to protect the system. I was talking about Lake Charles, Louisiana, also from Washington Post. Roofs have been peeled off, buildings are destroyed in Lake Charles. Storm leaped from a hurricane, Category 1 hurricane on Tuesday to a high-end Category 4 on Wednesday night. It was just shy of Category 5, 150-mile-per-hour winds. I was watching the live feeds from the area there. They weren't able to keep the feed going because so much of the infrastructure was knocked flat. The storm weakened and was downgraded to Category 2 this morning, but still had sustained winds of more than 100 miles per hour. And that was interesting to watch on the radar that the eye, like Hurricane Harvey, the eye stayed open, not as long as Harvey, but well over land. It didn't break up the way that hurricanes used to in past decades. Heavy rain was predicted to be widespread against the west central Gulf Coast, with 5 to 10 inches falling over a broad area. And Sonia, I think that the suffering from global climate change is also part of that that reducing circle that you were talking about, that quoting Pastor Niebuhr, I think was his name, that we allow this to, you know, we allow California to burn, we allow Lake Charles to drown, and the people who have the real power and the best bunkers are never going to be affected by it. As a matter of fact, they're getting richer and richer as the pandemic and the various disasters go forward. The billionaires are getting many, many more billions, and Bernie Sanders has been commenting on this and calling for a tax, which I think will not happen under these circumstances. There is no organized power in Congress right now that could possibly apply a billionaire tax, but it's a great idea, and I'm glad that it's out there. Well, look at that. We've come to the top of the hour and gone through another hour of calling into KBOO Portland on Press Watch. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and I'd like to thank all of you who have been participating and those of you who have been listening. I do hope that KBOO can be useful in focusing and moving towards a better future, towards a better world, through these discussions and through revealing these things that are intended to be hidden, hence the motto, News You're Not Supposed to Know. But you've been listening to KBOO on 90.7 FM. If you still use a receiver, or if you're in your car, or if you're like me, just plain Luddite and like to listen to radio receivers with batteries in them, and other frequencies elsewhere in Cascadia, also KBOO.FM, going out to you in that manner to all the ships at sea.